There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Okay, dear, I'll recognize
Lock it. Talk Radio.
Okay. And as usual, tonight we are saying an analysis of oppression requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism. We're also saying that this involves an anatomy of the American so-called political party system. And we're challenging our panelists this evening and our faithful followers to deal with the questions as to whether or not the healthcare issue will be the undoing of the Republican Party as with the Democratic Party. And a corollary question is, will Trump's inability to meld his anti-Semitic supporters with Zionism destroy his political agenda or political base? And so, before we get started with these topics and this discussion, which I will be reminding you about from time to time, I want to pass the microphone to Brother Ralph. And I want to remind everybody who believes we are our own liberators that we hope to see you at the State Office Building Saturday, March the 4th, in Harlem between 3 and 9 p.m. It's a fundraiser for all of our political prisoner families. Brother Ralph is in the house.
Hello, my brothers and sisters. What I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. A moment to explain a few of the terms that I have just used. And that is, when I say because of our heroes and sheroes, that means those people who took up arms to defend our community against the army of occupation, which many are dead and others are in prison, are not being supported by the people that they protected. We must remember that the breakfast program, very important in the public schools, was started by the Black Panther Party. And what did the Black Panther Party mean in America? It was not led by Ernesto Che Guevara. It was not led by Ho Chi Minh. It was led by a group of young men who wanted to show people that there was an ability to resist oppression. It was a psychological organization that had a great psychological effect, so much so that the American government, under the infamous J. Edgar Hoover, said the most dangerous group in America is the Black Panther Party, because they were educating the people to leave fear behind. And that brings me to a story of a young man who was in the space program, a mathematician, who is presently a political prisoner. And when he was asked what happened, he visited New York, Harlem, in the summer, taking a vacation, a break from his work. And he came to the center of culture and political life in America, black culture and black political life, black political action, was in Harlem. And Sundiata's words were, "When I got to Harlem, I saw people of color who were not afraid." And incidentally, just a few short weeks ago, I believe it was Albert Woodfox, who served 27 years in Angola prison. And he was asked what got him on the trail to fight for liberation. And his answer was, he too came to New York in the 60s. And he said, for the first time in my life. Now get this. He's from Louisiana, New Orleans, Louisiana. For the first time in my life, his words were, I saw black men who were not afraid. We all know that situation. Black people have been oppressed, terrorized by the society. And if you think that is too strong a term, just remember that the indigenous people here have been killed. They're dead. They are gone for the most part. Terrorism is at a lower level than death, maybe, because terrorism creates a mental death. And what are we doing on this program? We are trying to give people facts, situations to make them think about what is happening in this country. Make them think of the history of this country. Make them understand what is going on today to better prepare them and ourselves for tomorrow. And the root, the base of our philosophy and psychology is defend those who have defended you. Because we as a people have become, we have gone from chattel slavery, from slavery in chains, to political slaves. And when I say political slaves, I mean that is a people who support political parties and organizations without political reward. That is outrageous. Outrageous. But this is what we do. 90-95% of black women voted for Obama. And something like 85-90% of black men who voted for Obama. And when he became president, after attacking black men with the ridiculous statement that black men do not support or black men do not take care of their responsibilities, such as the black family, and he totally neglected the reality of slavery, the reality of Jim Crow, the reality of racism, and the reality of the political thought, the political theory that no one can be held responsible without rights. How do you hold a person responsible when you take away all of their rights? Now, he was in Harvard. He knew that, but he chose to forget about that and make anti-black statements, foolish black statements against people of color. But the liberal, non-theoretical, non-thoughtful, non-political misleadership class led people of color to support Obama on some kind of theory, well, it's going to improve things with us because he black, ain't he? And it proved to be incorrect. And those of us who understood that and spoke out against him were kind of ostracized by the black community. And now we want to deal with that reality. We're saying to you, we told you so. And I remember listening to a preacher, an old black preacher many years ago, and someone asked him, what is the key to your success with your congregation? And he said very simply, I tell them what I'm going to tell them, and then I tell them, and then I tell them again what I told them. We are talking about the importance of our political prisoners. If you don't support people who supported you, if you don't want political reward for your political work, you have a slave mentality. We're explaining where that came from. Can you imagine someone saying, for the first time in my life, I saw black men who were not afraid. I joined the Black Panther Party, and that got him 27 years in solitary confinement in Angola prison, and he was back in New York at a fundraiser for our political parties. And when he made that statement, it floored me. But I knew that because many years ago, I met a young man who had come back from Korea, a young black man from the South. And he ended up traveling in Europe with the army. And he said to me, I didn't know I was a slave until I got to Europe. I thought this was normal, the way we were treated in America. And he didn't know he was oppressed. But Europe freed him. And we want to take the chains off your mind, because we have, people have removed the chains from our behind, and so we will remove the chains from your mind, hopefully, with our information. Now, back to the issue, as Sister Betty has given me the T sign to get to the issue. Will health care, will that issue undo the Republican Party as well as it did the Democratic Party? We want single-payer health care, and President Obama gave us the Affordable Care Act, which was not single-payer health care, and he said it was off the table instantly. And Trump is trying to give us something, because the people is bad, and as the Affordable Care Act was, it was better than what we started with. But if you don't solve a problem, the problem is unsolved. The Affordable Care Act did not solve the problem, and Mr. Trump is not going to solve the problem, because he is still into the same thing the Democratic Party is into, and that is making sure that the corporations, the pharmaceuticals, and everybody else who is stealing our money is in position to continue stealing it. They will fail. And will Trump's inability to meld, and we all watch Star Trek, meld, you know, would put a hand on somebody's face, mind meld, and you became that person, will he be able to meld his anti-Semitic supporters with Zionism? Going to be a difficult problem. We will see what is going to happen, and I tell you, he is in trouble on both counts. But we, the people, we, the progressives, we, the so-called left, are in more trouble than anyone else. And I say that because the only thing I can think of that is worse than Mr. Trump as president would be Miss Hillary Clinton as president. Remember the slaver who stole $6 billion on the back of the Haitian people? When the earthquake came, she took that money, and while campaigning to lower the hourly wage from 80 cents an hour to 50 cents an hour, and then taking the money that people had sent from around the world to support the people of Haiti, taking the money in her foundation and loaning it to corporations to build businesses to hire people of Haiti for 50 cents an hour. And my friends, brothers and sisters, that is modern day slavery and worse. She's a thief. She gave her daughter 10 years wages in the foundation, plus she paid for her sumptuous wedding. And I would rather see Mr. Trump president than Mrs. Clinton. With that said, we the people, the progressive people, are in trouble, because I see the left and the progressives are lining up behind the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party cannot even support Keith Ellison, who was not even a Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders is not a socialist, but the Democratic Party could not even take Keith Ellison. And so we're in trouble. Not because of what they've done, but because what we've done, what we are not doing. And I have been given the hook by Sister Betty Davis, so I will remove myself from this microphone. I hope I've given you something to think about, a few things, and I turn it over to Sister Betty Davis.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. I'm not giving you the hook. I want you to save some of it for later, because we have an extended broadcast tonight. We will be on until 10:30 this evening, and I want to remind all of our participants. I also, before I introduce our next panelist, remind you of a quote from Malcolm X, which is, usually when people are sad, they don't do anything. They just cry over their condition. But when they get angry, they bring about change. And within that context, I want to remind you of a statement made by the following guest who will be speaking to us. And he said, "My pain at Herman's passing," that was our political prisoner, Herman Bell. He says, "My pain at Herman's passing is incalculable, and our collective determination to free Lynn Stewart while she yet lives." Leonard Peltier, Albert Woodfox, the Angola 3, Mamia Abubakar Jamal, Eddie Conway, and all other political prisoners now must be intensified and redoubled. And I'd like to remind you that subsequent to this statement, Brother Larry Pinkney was very active in helping to free Lynn Stewart, as are most of the people who are participating in this broadcast. And so what I want to say to you tonight is what Rosa Luxemburg said: those who do not move do not notice their chains. Brother Larry, are you in the house?
Oh, I am in the house, and as always, Sister Betty Davis, Sister Professor Betty Davis, you know, you send chills through my body. It's almost as if you read my mind. I was actually thinking about that very, very quote in terms of what Brother Malcolm had said in terms of, you know, people who bring about change, sad people don't. Angry people do. Uncomfortable people do. In fact, I coined a phrase that said, comfortable people don't make change. Uncomfortable people do. I have to, first and foremost, I want to extend my regards to, obviously, to you, Sister Betty Davis, to our stalwart brother, Ralph Poynter, to our incredible, fantastic warrior, people's lawyer, our warrior, people's lawyer, none other than Lynn Stewart. I want to extend my greetings, my love to all of us on this program, including, I'm looking forward to others, you know, Sister Ann Lamb, you know, Brother Tom, Joel, Brother Tariq. I want to extend my regards, my love and strength. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Now, having said that, I have to chuckle. I love it when Ralph says, "I see the hook, the hook." I love it. I know it's not really a hook at all, but that's Ralph's generation and partly my own generation, and I love it. But, you know, Brother Ralph made some incredible points, and we need to understand that first and foremost in this struggle, first and foremost, we must address our political prisoners. And when I say address, let me be more specific. We must free our political prisoners, black, white, brown, red, yellow. We must emulate the example of the Puerto Rican community in Puerto Rico and throughout the United States and the Puerto Rican communities, but especially in Puerto Rico and New York. We must emulate that. And in fact, we must intensify that for all of our political prisoners, whether we're talking about Brother Mumia, who is in serious trouble health-wise, talking about Brother Seth Hayes, whether we're talking about our dear indigenous native Brother Leonard Peltier, whether we're talking about Reverend Edward Pinkney. It's an endless list that won't be missed until we get them out. And I'm going to say this now, and I hope I can come back later on the program to address the whole health matter that I think is, when I say health, I mean the situation in terms of so-called health care, and I say so-called, I'll explain that later, in this country and how that affects us systemically. Actually, I see a silver lining. I think we are seeing very blatantly the system, and I repeat the system. I'm not even talking about Trump or Hillary Clinton or Hillary Clinton or whatever you want to call it. I'm talking about the system. And I see, and I think if we all pay close attention, I see that crumbling. And I agree with Brother Ralph Poynter. I'm glad, I would prefer that Mr. Trump be president, because now we're seeing who the real folks are versus the shucking and jiving liberals. Now, and so-called liberals, so-called progressives, so-called leftists. Now we're finding out who they are. And let's remember the words also, if I may quote Brother Malcolm yet again, when he said, worse even than death is betrayal. Betrayal is worse even than death. And we have been betrayed repeatedly, whether it's by the Barack Obama drone man, Nobel Peace Prize winning for nothing but killing in Libya, killing in Somalia, killing right here in the U.S. of A. Or whether it's by the so-called liberals, so-called progressives, so-called leftists, give me a break. It's time for everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown people to unify around principle, capital P, principle, because that's how we will bring about systemic change. So I'm going to end now, for now. I hope I can come back on later. I have a couple of articles that I want to talk about, come back on later, and address this matter of health care and as it affects this system and what we could and should be doing right now. All power to the people. Thank you so much. Looking forward to hearing from everybody. Thank you, my sister.
Thank you so much for that. The Honorable Larry Pinckney, but nobody elected him to anything, but we, the people, elect to be alongside of Lynn Stewart is our theoretician, legal theoretician, to help us understand what is going on, and the person who freed himself after 10 years through the paperwork that he was to submit to the government. But talking about comrades and theory and law, I'm going to have to go to a statement made by one of our comrades, Mimi Rosenberg. And she made a statement and put it online dealing with Lynn Stewart's sickness. Lynn Stewart is ill. We hope she's listening in tonight, because she is so much a part of our movement. And I'm just going to read a short paragraph from Mimi Rosenberg. Comrades, just taking a moment to heap tribute on Sister Lynn for her dignity and resilience against still slander and threats to quell our political convictions and righteous representation of her former client. She is feisty and filled with principle and will not be silenced by the media's hysteria regarding and the government's impugning people of the Islamic faith, and indeed many of them as dissenters against tyrannical regimes. Bravo, my courageous sister. In solidarity, Mimi Rosenberg. And I'm going to, it gives me chills. It gives me chills. So I'm going to stop and call on Brother Tom. Help us out, Tom. Are you with us this evening?
Yes, I am. My greetings to all my brothers and sisters on this call. I'd like to read you a little bit of an article that I'm preparing for the Manhattan Green's newsletter called Green Action. How can a ruling class of less than 1% convince the working class, who make up the vast majority, to support a system that oppresses them at home, and then convince them to go abroad to fight and even die? The ruling class controls the mass media and the educational system that brainwash the 99%. The privatization of the public schools through charters, the underfunding of the public schools and control over the curriculum is one way. Another way to control the 99% is to divide and conquer by racism, sexism, xenophobia, and misplaced patriotism. And this is nothing new. Without this brainwashing, the power of this ruling class will be seriously threatened. In recent years, the public is much more vulnerable to brainwashing, as this process not only takes place in the schools, the press, and the movies, but is brought into our homes through television and the internet. This system, called capitalism, creates periodic crises that force the ruling class to make compromises in order to avoid a complete breakdown and possible social revolution. The most serious crisis in 19th century America came out of the incompatibility of slavery with industrial capitalism, resulting in the worst bloody war in U.S. history, the collapse of the Whig Party, the discrediting of the Democratic Party, and the emergence of the new Republican Party. During the international economic breakdown of the 1930s, the Republican Party was discredited, and the Democratic Party, under FDR's New Deal, had to make compromises to a militant working class whose unions were influenced by the growth of independent leftist parties. The FDR administration regulated the banks, established Social Security, a jobs program called WPA, unemployment compensation, and the right of workers to organize and strike. But despite these reforms, only World War II ended the Depression. And since the end of that war, there has been a steady erosion of the New Deal. During the 1960s and 70s, other rebellious movements emerged among blacks, women, and gays. The Democratic Party, under President Johnson, established the Voting Rights Act, affirmative action, abortion rights, and recently this party supported gay rights. But at the same time, the Democratic Party totally abandoned the working class. How important is it for women to be able to have an abortion, or for blacks to vote for a bought-out black politician, or for both genders to have same-sex marriages, while at the same time, those from these groups are in the working class, both black and white, cannot get jobs that will get them out of poverty? These recent rights have not improved a lot of the majority of the American people, but they have provided the Democratic Party a rationale as the, quote, lesser of two evils. And the growing realization that the Democratic Party has abandoned any pretense of helping the working class is, in my opinion, the main reason why Trump won the election. Trump correctly said that the whole process is rigged, but this is already understood by the majority of Americans. And now we see Trump waffling on his rhetoric to keep cheap labor out of the country, to stop the outsourcing of the economy, to regulate the banks, and to pull back from constant wars, because these policies are not in the interests of Wall Street. In fact, following Obama's example, he selected another Goldman Sachs banker, Steven Mnuchin, for Secretary of the Treasury, and investment billionaire William Ross for Commerce Secretary. And will Trump pull back from wars and regime changes by increasing the military budget and selecting retired Marine General James Mattis as defense secretary, who led the invasion of Iraq and is accused of war crimes? And Trump selected Scott Pruitt to head the Environmental Protection Agency, who denies climate change and had stated that the EPA should be abolished. And Betsy DeVos is to head the Department of Education, but she will undermine the public schools by supporting vouchers and even more charters. So, would Hillary's economic and foreign policies be much different? Both former President Obama and Hillary supported charter schools. They did little to get off fossil fuels. Obama appointed people from Goldman Sachs to head the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department, and together with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, followed an aggressive militaristic foreign policy in the Middle East and in Libya, destroying those countries and creating the worst refugee problem since World War II. Hillary received huge campaign funding from Wall Street, and the stock market took a dive when she lost the election. until Trump reassured investors that he would reduce their taxes and deregulate the economy. Now, until Americans face up to their history and understand the realities of this system, they will fall for the lesser of the two evils argument and rotate from one corporate party to another. Previous neoliberal, Democratic, and Republican administrations have laid down the foundations of fascism through corporate control of the economy and militarism overseas, enabling the proto-fascist Donald Trump to be elected under the veneer of populism. Our challenge is to build a united, multiracial movement within the working class, allied with existing environmental, anti-war, anti-racist, and immigrant groups. And so far, Blacks, Latinos, and the indigenous are showing the way. Getting rid of Trump will not bring about any change. What we need is system change.
Thank you for that, my brother Tom. You have done great.
And let me say thank you, Tom. Thank you. You used the word system. Thank you, Tom. That's where I'm coming from. This is Larry. Thank you, bro. Okay. Sorry, bro.
That was great.
Yes,
thank you.
Right on. And as we see, there's a call for general strike in America. That which has never happened before, the unions we had. And so that makes me think of Chairman Mao when he said, I'm not talking about the working class, I'm talking about the peasants. It reminds me of someone who said, I'm not talking about the working class, I'm talking about the unemployed. I'm talking about people. And now we see some movement with the people, but I will tell you, as a person who has worked for political prisoners over the years, I'm disappointed in us. We the people, we know all about Frederick Douglass. Power concedes nothing without a demand, and we have demanded nothing. We looked and said, he black, ain't he? And we supported Obama. And I like the words of Tom when he said, butt out black politicians. All but a few. I will just mention a few. If those who I don't mention, forgive me. It is our own Sister Cynthia McKinney down in Atlanta. And I'm going to try to get her to run again. And I don't care what you call it. And people say you can't run within the party. And the Dixocrats ran within the party and had their own policy and everybody knew who they were. I'm talking about Cynthia McKinney's and Charles Barron's. We have to get out there and support them, make systematic change. And I'm going to give it up because I feel the hook again is coming to me. And so I'm going to turn it over to Sister Betty.
Okay, before we want to acknowledge that Sister Ann is in the house, and we definitely have to get a report from her because so many tragic things have been going on with regard to our political prisoners. Brother Shoneman is in the house, and Brother Tariq. We all remember the amazing discussions we had from these our panelists last week, so we want to leave room for them to come back and sum up for us. But before we do that, I want to reinforce what Brother Tom said. In the area where I live, which is New York City, the Kings County politics assemblyman by the name of Dove Hyken has said the left is as guilty of anti-Semitism as Trump. And he bases this, and I want you to listen carefully, on the fact that he claims that the Obama administration promoted anti-Israel bias throughout the world, but that anti-Israel sentiments have been used in the last half of the century, and that it is to spew anti-Jewish rhetoric. So, in effect, he's saying that your anti-Israel support, yet support the Jewish people is just a tactic that Jew haters adopted. So in New York City, in the area where I live, in the political Democratic Party, if I believe in the right of the Palestinian people to freedom, if I believe in the right of the people of Libya not to be massacred, if I believe in the right of the people in Yemen to live, if I believe in the right of the people to Syria not to be bombed into oblivion, that makes me anti-Semitic. And Alambe Braff said it used to be a time when anti-Semitism was anybody who didn't like Jews. And he says now anti-Semitism is anybody the Jews don't like. And without further ado, Brother Joel, you got the mic.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We hear you loud and clear, Joel.
Yes. Well, I want to start out this week by saying that I want to send a special shout out to Lynn Stewart.
Yes.
Whom I've heard is having more severe health problems now, and I want to ask everybody to hope and metaphorically to pray that that she can have an improvement, and that we certainly need her in the upcoming we need her spirit in the upcoming period where we face a lot of challenges, and we need someone like that who is able to use the legal system and to some degree turn it around and raise consciousness while taking on those cases that very few others, especially in the legal profession, with all due respect, would touch. And I want to say that I used to, back in the 60s, I used to visit with Ralph and Lynn Stewart back in Pitt Street, I think it was, which is a continuation of Avenue C. And it's really, I have a lot of very strong feelings for her, both for her personally and for her, the example that she has made, that it's really a challenge for any of us to follow. And of course, I know that I'm speaking on behalf of so many of the political prisoners and the almost political prisoners that didn't quite become prisoners because of her work. And so I think we should all focus on that for a moment. Now, in terms of this, right now, as we hold our conversation here, Donald Trump is addressing a joint session of Congress. And he's laying out a very intensified line of oppression on all fronts. While he claims to be for peace with Putin and so on, he's building up what he said and would be the United States military bigger and stronger than ever. And when somebody says something like that, think World War II, when I believe there were 10 to 12 million people in uniform and the whole country was militarized. And that war, which is frequently called the Good War, because they had an enemy that they could make look worse than they were, at the same time, That was the war that cemented the world superpower as an imperialist hegemon, as a an oppressor of the entire world, and which permanently militarized the United States as the occupier of the entire world. Now, I say permanently, that's as long as the capitalist system, and in its, especially in its imperialist phase, is not overthrown and replaced. I believe the only type of system that can replace it is a system based on the working class, which today is the only social basis, if properly organized and properly conscious, of restoring the whole idea of a democratic republic, because until we have the rule of the majority of people, which is the working people and those close to the working people that create all the wealth of society in the saddle, being able to make decisions and thinking from the perspective of a class that's not based on oppressing and exploiting other classes and other peoples, will only have a handful, ruled by a handful of the most wealthy people against the interests of everyone else. Now, the Trump phenomenon, while I don't see much of a perspective of improving it by a Hillary type, the difference with Trump is that he makes the open appeal to poisoning the minds of the people, where there's not even a hypocrisy of recognizing people's rights. It extends around the world. For example, the Trump administration and the Trump Republican platform, for the first time in a long succession, is the only, for the first time, does not recognize the right of the Palestinians to form their own state. They are against the two-state solution. And this means, starting from there, an intensification of the really hideous policies. In the United States, he confronted the, rather than hypocritically going along with some of the tenets, he appealed to the people as the law and order candidate, meaning that no matter what the police did, no matter how much they violated people's rights, no matter how much they outright committed murder in the name of law enforcement, that he would back them. And it's not just that he would, it's the kind of appeal that he makes and the kind of poison that he dredges up among the popular mind. That's a really dangerous thing. And these types of phenomena, if you know, look at the historical experience, especially in Nazi Germany, they also came to power because of the disappointment in the Social Democrats, which spoke in the name of the working people and yet helped enforce even foreign imperialists reducing the regular people in Germany to actual starvation in the streets. And so the Social Democrats became a disappointment, and by default, somebody that actually never won an election in Germany, Adolf Hitler and his Nazi party, were able to take power. Now, some people thought that it would be a short period that he would antagonize everyone so much that he would provoke a revolution and the overthrow of the entire social system. But it actually took, once they got into power, it actually took an invasion by the largest alliance in history and an occupation, military occupation in Germany to restore the code of hypocrisy to the ruling class rather than the open, outright Nazism, which not only poisoned the minds of many people, but also destroyed almost every resistor during that period. There was one estimation was that now it's his turn, tomorrow it'll be our turn. That was spoken by many progressive people, but the turn to even have an election and even confront the worst poison of Nazism only took place after the occupation in the 1950s. And so we have an enormous challenge ahead of us because we have to intensify that struggle and we have to go up against the ideas that are today seeping into the minds of the people at an increased rate, the intensified hatred of certain religions, especially Islam, the intensified hatred of immigrants who are, yes, being used by Wall Street to bring cheap labor to the country, but the problem is that that's being used as an excuse to disrupt international solidarity and to strengthen the thinking of imperialism. That is, a lot of the disappointment, even from the point of view of, well, he'll bring the jobs back from China, or he'll bring the jobs that have been exported back to the United States. He means that he's appealing to the idea, not that it could be accomplished, but he's appealing to the idea of restoring prosperity to America based on robbing the rest of the world, with his sights aimed at China. And even now, with his making of the seeming moves towards reconciliation with Russia, it can't really be trusted. What was the only country at the height of the period of when the Soviet Union existed based on the 1917 revolution, the only country that made a non-aggression pact with it? That was Germany in 1939, but we all know that in the short period it ended with the largest and most oppressive attack in world history on the country that had been said to be in the non-aggression pact. So Trump is a tool of imperialism. He can't be trusted on anything. And even when you look at the subtext of what he's saying, he's appealing to restoring the glories of U.S. hegemony and imperialism. When he says we want America to be great again, when he rants and raves against political correctness, what is political correctness? It's an attempt to deal with the very often subconscious, assumed ideologies of oppression, of racism, of sexism, homophobia, and so on. It's an attempt to deal with that. He says we shouldn't even try to deal with that. We should go with it. He can't say that quite openly, but he comes pretty close. And what has been called, he speaks with a dog whistle. That is, if you try to nail him, a lot of the wording sounds like it's not really as bad as what it means. But people that have elements of oppressive ideology in their minds, they know exactly what it means, and they're rallying around it. So it's we always have to, I think, put first, if we're looking towards revolution, the consciousness of the people and which way it's moving. So we have to ask, is the discreditation of the Democratic Party resulting in Trump something that will lead to the overthrow of the system, or will it lead to the crushing of any resistance at all, even the hypocrisy? And it's really up to us people, because we have it in our potential. It can go either way, but we have it in our potential to bring it to a revolutionary outcome. And in that, we have to expose the poison. We have to create the antidote to that poison in terms of solidarity among exploited and oppressed people against the exploiters and the oppressors, which is the corporate and financial hierarchy of this country, especially at the very top, but also counting those whose attitudes become more oppressive and more exploitative and more fascistic based on their existence in a so-called middle class, which is being crushed by the top, but then who take it out on people below them, on the bottom. They scapegoat downward, and they think that the answer is for the United States to be more repressive and more openly fascistic to create what they consider a favorable political climate towards business. So this alliance between major capital and a lot of minor capitalists, and also a lot of the working class, which is tempted to achieve a greater degree of prosperity as a benefit of imperialism. So we have a very big challenge ahead of us, and we have to be careful also not to demonize these middle layers, which can also go either way, to the point where our rhetoric can make it impossible for them to identify with the revolution that we're trying to build, which is really in the interests of, well, as they say, the 99% as opposed to the 1%, not only financially and not only in terms of materialistically, but also spiritually, that we are becoming more and more inhuman towards ourselves, towards each other, and towards others. We're losing our humanity because more and more we're being induced by this system to crave and to worship wealth and money. You know, it's like that story from the Bible where Moses came down from the hill and people were playing with that golden calf. And now the golden calf, symbolically, is on Wall Street, that bull in front of the Merrill Lynch building. That's the grown-up golden calf, symbolically. And we have to turn away from that and worship more the best that humanity has to offer spiritually in order to recover any human spirit at all. And I feel that...
Okay, Joe.
Yes.
Thank you so much for that. And I am so glad that this program is archived, because there is so much information coming out of the participants in this program. I have to listen to it over and over again to digest that information. And talking about information, I'm talking about the king of information, one who has been bringing us information that will liberate us, our brother Ralph Shulman of Taking Aim. And it's hard to say Ralph Shulman without saying Ralph and Maya's program of Taking Aim on WBAI for years and years and years. Ralph, are you in the house?
Yes, thank you, Ralph. So good to be with you and good to hear you again tonight. I've been listening carefully to what's been said, and I think we have to mobilize as we've never mobilized before. Ralph, I want to call attention to brothers and sisters, the call that we received tonight from Workers' World, the Workers' World Party in New York, Larry Holmes' opening remarks. Can a general strike be organized on May Day? Why should the general strike be global? What role can a general strike play in fighting war, Trump's new war on immigrants? How can you help organize a general strike? And it is a delineation of a perspective which is widely shared, although the organizing of that is an event that has to be undertaken by broad forces, and Larry is very clear about that himself. But I want to emphasize that this is a call that's being reflected in labor organizations and trade unions in increasing numbers. The Dock Workers Union has called for a one-day strike on the U.S. East Coast. That's a story in today's newspaper. They've threatened to call a day of action and shut down ports along the eastern Gulf Coast. And the union is expected to announce the date for the work stoppage, which will include a dock workers' march on Washington. Longshore workers are on the front lines of the drive by shipping line owners and terminal operators, and the call for a work stoppage by the ILA follows a recent series of such actions, including a one-day unsanctioned walkout in New York and in New Jersey, and a slowdown at the port of Charleston. So this has been building and is being increasingly reflected in not just statements but organizing coming out of the working class and the trade union organizations. On March 4th, there's going to be an organizing meeting at the home of Alan Benjamin of the San Francisco Labor Council, with the chair of the Labor Council speaking, and with many of the trade union members of the San Francisco Labor Council engaging in this, including the ILWU, which is preparing for actions on the ports in Oakland and in San Francisco. The scale of the protest points to immense social anger that has been suppressed during 8 years of the Obama administration, and with the allegiance of true union functionaries to the Democratic Party, an allegiance which is weakening in the face of opposition, reflecting the dissatisfaction and disaffection of large numbers of rank-and-file members of workers' organizations. This is a song of the future, but not of the far future. It's of the immediate future, one for which we have to prepare and organize and in which we have to participate, because the struggle is against the ruling class, the financial oligarchy that controls us, and the political political front people for that apparatus are not the main issue. They're merely the face of capital, but the structure of capital is what we have to resist. And workers at the point of the production are the first step to challenging that in a systemic way, for which socialists and revolutionaries have to prepare. The oppression of the African Americans, the oppression of all minorities, the oppression of all sectors of the population flow from that structure of power. And we have to unite people behind a structure of resistance that is capable of paralyzing the capitalist system at the point of production. That's what's implicit, that's what's pregnant with possibility, and what's building now in the workers' response to the crisis facing the society.
Thank you so much for that, Ralph. And I want people to understand the roots of this movement are the unorganized workers. These are the immigrants. These are the people who have been kept out. As I have said many times, change is inevitable. The only question is where change will come from. Will it come from inside, or will the change come from outside? This movement has grand potential, and we must not, when I say we, the people of goodwill, the people who want to improve the world for everyone, the people who think inclusively as opposed to exclusively, as our sister Lynn Stewart reminds us, this movement has potential. Let us make that happen. And thank you so much for that, Ralph. This program is archived. Dial it up. I'm going to be dialing it up tomorrow and listening carefully for what I missed. And the day after tomorrow, I've been reminded to listening to what I have missed. And now we go to the heart of our program, the heart. We want to be like Anne. We're talking about political business. Anne, are you in the house?
I am in the house.
Tariq?
Hopefully Tariq is in the house as well. Yes, well, as you know, I said last week about, I read the thing about the horrible situation with the water in Pennsylvania prisons. So tomorrow is the National Day of Action. I remind people, you can go to freemumia.com for the information. You can also go to jerichony.org for the information. There are people to call and fax and tweet about this horrible situation, which is affecting not only Mahanoy and Frackville prisons, but also the town in which they are located. So this is not just in the prisons. This is also, you know, the water that everybody in the town is drinking, interestingly enough. And also on Friday, go to jerichony.org. On Friday, we will be once again calling and faxing up to Albany. I got a report from somebody. Fax numbers have changed, so I updated them for Seth about this insulin pump monitor, which is very, very important and life-saving, and he needs to get it. So there was this little rumor from some high muckamuck that it has been ordered, but we have no guarantee of that. So we will continue to call and fax and write. And I hope people are really, truly doing this because it is extremely important. And then I just got a letter from my friend Jaleel Muntakim about what has happened in the latest update on his, you know, ongoing situation of harassment. So he says, "Dear friends and supporters, for certain I will be here until March 21st, 2017, since Albany docs affirmed the disciplinary conviction and excessive sanctions. Docs Shoe Commissioner D. Venitosi did this while Prisoners Legal Service of Buffalo, who were to file a supplemental brief on the appeal, never received the records of the Tier 3 disciplinary hearing. PLS also never received the audio or video recordings in violation of my due process rights on appeal. Essentially, DOCS is adamant about violating prisoners' First Amendment rights of speech and being able to express our beliefs. The disciplinary proceedings and appeal process further confirm what was reported in the New York Times articles of December 4th and 5th, 2016. Hence, was my being placed in SHU on December 6th a coincidence? Probably not. These DOCS discriminatory practice must be exposed and challenged by all freedom-loving people. In the spirit of Nelson Mandela, Jaleel A. Muntakim, February 19, 2017. So that is some brief reports. I'm sure there are many more things I could talk about. I do advise people to go to freejaleel.com as well as jerichony.org. There's a lot of information there about his case, the case of New York 3. A lot of his writings are there. His blog is there. Pictures of his family and comrades are there. You know, very good. There's also this lovely interview with Claude Marx of Freedom Archives, which is an audio interview that was done on January 12th, which is quite wonderful, too. Not very long. People should listen to that as well. So this is what's happening. And, of course, on Saturday, we will be having the annual Malcolm X Commemoration Committee dinner for the families of our political prisoners and prisoners of war. And I do love the name of the thing. The theme this year is Black Resistance Matters, No Surrender, No Retreat. So I thought that's quite lovely. That will be from 3 until whenever at the Harlem State Office Building, 163 West 125th at AC Powell Boulevard. I believe Sister Yalua will be in attendance. Always great to see Sister Yalua, as well as all the wonderful families who come and the people who come in support. It's really a wonderful event. I would encourage people to come. We do have a nice poem from Jalil in there, and also a nice statement by Sundiata Kohli. I would read them, but we're saving them for the dinner, and then I could read them next week.
but thank you.
Thank you so much.
And as I say to people, be like Anne. She is on the program, but this is only a small part of her activity. Over the years, she goes to the prisons to speak to our political prisoners. She writes. She talks about their plight. And so let us continue and remember what has been said by Anne. These three things, water, Hep C, Reverend Pinckney, they're all related.
Yep.
Listen in to the archiving of this program, water, Hep C, Reverend Pinckney. And so now let us go to Tariq. Tariq, are you in the house?
Oh, peace, Brother Ralph. I'm here.
Yay, Tariq.
Give us information.
Yes, okay. Peace, Brother Ralph Pointer, and peace, Sister Lynn Stewart. I want to say to Lynn, Lynn, I love you. Stay up, and you know how we do. Peace, Sister Betty Davis. Peace, Sister Ann Lamb, and peace to the other contributors to the and to the listeners. Thanks for having me. I am Tariq. I am a Black Panther. I am a former Black Liberation Army prisoner of war. I spent 17 years in various American concentration camps. We live in a bipolar world. On one end are the 1%. On the other end are revolutionaries, especially our prisoners of war. While the 1% were children, their parents trained them to think of themselves as worthless. While the 1% ruling class were children, they arrived at believing the solution to their problems was to get wealth, money. That childish solution is wrong. Rather than solving their problems, pursuing that childish solution has resulted in creating numerous new bloody problems. To get wealth, money, the 1% ruling class are ruthlessly exploiting, robbing, and oppressing, terrorizing the people. Our prisoners of war fought to stop the 1%. We have to free all of our prisoners of war. Tonight, I will start by briefly speaking about Obama affordable health care. The Republicans have to walk lightly on the affordable health care issue. The people are letting the Republicans know they had better not dismantle Obamacare. I believe, ultimately, the Republicans are going to be happy with only having made a few modifications to Obamacare without totally repealing it. And actually, the solution is free health care. I would also like to speak about, moreover, I would briefly like to speak on the other question, and that question is, with Trump's inability to meld his anti-Semitic supporters with Zionism, destroy his political agenda, his base. I believe Trump's base is definitely not a monolithic entity, will survive his presidency. Certainly, one of the components making up Trump's political base are persons who are rabidly anti-Semitic. Every chance they get, they verbally express they feel about the Zionists the same way they feel about black people, which is totally negative. Trump's political base also has a small vocal, financially powerful component. It is this latter group that make up the leadership strata of the fascist right wing. They call the shots. They let the pure ideologues know when their behavior has crossed over into the financial arena. The right-wing plutocrats will remind the rank-and-file ideologues the Zionists spend billions of dollars in American factories. The Zionists buy from America tanks, airplanes, tractors, lampposts, and many other commodities. The money spent in America by the Zionists is the glue that will hold together Trump's political base. This is a question that repeatedly surfaces in right-wing circles. Who is really in charge? The ideologues or the plutocrats? So far, the plutocrats have won every round. Trump knows he can go forward full force with his agenda. And I say power to the people. And also, I want to just add that the 1% do what they have to stay in power. And I want to remind you that at the close of the Civil War, the Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, was offering to black people total citizenship, the right to vote and participate in every way if they joined the Confederate Army. I just want to say that. So I want to say that 1% would do what they have to. And when all the people in the United States were saying that Nixon and all the government administrators were a bunch of liars and crooks, they threw Nixon under the bus and they put in the Sunday school teacher, and who was that? Jimmy Carter, you know, because the right wing saw that they had to do that. They put Obama in because they wanted the capitalists wanted to do some things that capitalists are not supposed to do. That's why the issue of birth was so important. Where was he born? What's his birth certificate? Because they're saying that capitalists born in America are not supposed to help a failing business. If a business is going out of business, the capitalists feel the business should be allowed to go out of business. And so they put Obama in and said that he wasn't even American. And that's why he was bailed out Wall Street. He bailed out the auto industry. He helped the foreclosure people because the capitalists are not supposed to do that. But the 1% selected Obama to do that. They do what they have to in order to survive. Thank you for having me. Peace.
Thank you so much. And let us remember, in America, poverty is a penalty. That means poor are penalized, not just being without. They are attacked in every way for being poor in this capitalist system. Sister Betty?
Before we go to all of those who have contributed tonight and ask you for a one-minute summation, I have the mic open for 718. Those are the first numbers, and the last four digits, 9268. Did you want to take 2 minutes to talk to us? 9268.
Yes, hi, it's Vivian Morgan from Friends of Wingate Park. I just wanted to say I've been listening in. I haven't called in a few weeks, but I put it on my calendar, so I'm going to be able to share it with my contact list now because I've been home from work as a construction worker. I've been home for about a month, so I'm able to kind of catch up with some paperwork that I wasn't able to do prior. So I put it on my calendar, my Friends of Wingate Park calendar, and I'm going to be able to share it with my contact list, and I'll be able to call in more frequently. So I just wanted to let everyone know that I appreciate everything that was said, I heard, and I listened, and I listened, and I listened. And that's what I have to say, and thank you.
Well, thank you for that, and I am going to take credit for bringing Vivian Morgan into our political sphere because she started out many years ago as an individual. She started out with a principle. She says the marijuana has to be made legal. Before way before people understood the medicinal values of marijuana, before people understood that the corporations wanted to control it, before people understood that it was coming and the corporations were going to put everybody out of business, before it became legal. And I'm going to
and say... And also, Ralph, I want to say one more thing. Now, a few weeks ago, I introduced to some of the political Brooklyn politician that I wanted to start a Friends of Wingate Park Health and Fitness Initiative, because so many of our people in our community are suffering from high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, and I'm getting emails from them saying that they're starting an initiative. So sometimes, because we do not have the backing, they steal our ideas and run with it. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting here and I'm saying to myself, you know, I just got an email from one of the same people that I went to ask them to help me start this initiative to get more people to come out and work out and get fit in the park. We're doing a free program. And they're sending me an email that they're doing a free program. So it's so funny to me. And I said to myself, you know, I'm going to start shooting my email out more and letting people know that we're doing it. So we're still going to do it. And this is the battle that I always have. I come up with an idea, and just like the marijuana, no one paid attention. But as soon as they say, oh, wait, like, you know, the light bulb come on, everybody jump on the bandwagon and steal it and run with it, because we do not stick together and we do not help each other build. So I just wanted to put that in also. So the next thing that I'm working on is trying to aware people in my community about health disease, trying to work out more, trying to work on diabetes, trying to get tested for these health ailments.
Well, thank you so much for that, Vivian, because your energy, your brains, and your desire to help the people forward this movement is what makes this thing and what makes you important. We will continue, and thank you for that. And I'm going to turn back to Sister Betty Davis.
One of the things I'd like to remind people of is that Sister Vivia was a strong mentee of Jim Houghton, who was a communist and an organizer for the workers in Harlem way back when. And
Harlem
she
fight
learned
back.
A lot. Sitting at
Harlem Fight Back.
Harlem Fight Back, I remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when we talk about getting into organizing, Vivia, the Democratic Party, they are parasites. And
yes.
They're going to go wherever we push. If they think it's going to get votes, they're going to give it lip service. But you're still needed, and we're all still needed to make them do it. And what I'd like to task you with is we have a prison population in our death camps that are dying from hepatitis C. But we know that outside in the public, the public is also dying from hepatitis C. We're talking about 5-year-old children who have hep C. So if you would push that initiative and make these politicians address that issue, linking it to our political prisoners, you would be one of our own liberators.
Okay, most definitely. I will definitely try to start talking about FB also in this. We're starting April 1st. We're going to be doing fitness classes, free fitness classes in the park, start at 12 o'clock starting April 1st. So
I will
get some pamphlets. Yes.
We will support your.
Keep on going. I will get some pamphlets on hepatitis B, and I'll try to go to the Department of Health, get as much information as I can, so we can set up a table and hand out these important findings and information for the community.
Vivian Morgan, a doer, a thinker,
yes.
An act. see. We must move on that, and we must organize. I turn it back to Sister Betty.
Well, as you know, we promised with this extension, we want to give those who are still with us, if you want to give us a one-minute summation, just announce yourself and say what you got to say. I don't know who wants to lead us off. Brother Larry, Brother Joel, who's ever, Brother Tom, your mics are open. If you want to throw in a word or two about the discussion this evening.
Yes, this is Brother Larry. This is Larry. I want to, first of all, thank everyone again. I think that I want to comment on a couple of things. One, to Brother Joel, I want you to remember that in Germany, the Social Democrats are the ones who facilitated the rise of Adolf Hitler, who, by the way, that wasn't even his actual name, from Austria. But anyway, what we're seeing in this country is something very similar with the so-called, and I say so-called, Democratic Party. That's point one. Point two, I want to second the emotion of the sister who was just on before me. Let's remember that hepatitis C is something being suffered actually by the entire population, especially by so-called baby boomers. And I'm not just talking, in fact, I'm not even talking about our prisoners, political prisoners of war, just the entire population. In fact, out here in the Midwest, they actually have commercials now on TV directed to quote-unquote baby boomers, and they're not talking about prisoners, who better get tested for hepatitis C. The third thing I want to say is this, that, you know, we've really got to grow up and politically mature. You know, whether Hillary Clinton was in or Mr. Trump was in or whoever was in, you know, we have to grow up, mature, grow up. The system is what needs to be changed. And this is what it's really, really all about, systemic change. You know, we've got to stop being children. Systemic change is what this is about. So I think that people need to understand that. We need to talk to each other in plain everyday language. You know, there are many who come out of the so-called left, and we use certain terminology and blah, blah, blah. You know what? Just talk to people in plain everyday language. That's how I have learned so much from people from all kinds of so-called ideologies, or what I call idiotology. So thank you again, all power to the people. Those are my comments. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Larry. One of the things we have to understand is single-payer health care. Single-payer health care. That is an issue. You grab your arms around it, grab it and squeeze, and don't let it go. That is a solution. Call it socialism, capitalism, communism, name it anything else. It has to be single health care, and we must have other issues that are key to our hearts that we fight for. And we don't have to assign them a theoretical position. We are for free in our political prisoners. Call it what you want. Sister Betty.
Have anybody? All right. So at this point, if no one else wants to give us a second or two.
Yeah.
See you in the whirlwind.
Yeah. Tyreek, 1-2.
Yeah, Tyreek.
Okay, closing statement. The 1% are able to stay in power because they are saddling the masses with the same mindset possessed by the masses during the yesteryears of 1200 and before. The military is one of their brainwashing venues. So are the schools and the prisons. In those institutions, they teach people to think of themselves as stupid, as cowards, to lack self-confidence, and think of themselves as worthless. Revolutionaries have to get in the training arena, the masses have to be made aware of all the things the 1% are doing against them and their children. then I believe the people will not tolerate the 1% for one more minute. We have to get in that training arena and fully know that. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you,
Brother Tariq, and to all of our panelists. We want you to keep Lynn Stewart in your mind tonight. She was listening but not able to contribute. And a special announcement in East New York, 1033 Glenmore Avenue, one community, Batal Mamour Master. There's a unity service for black and brown people Friday, March the 3rd at 5:30 p.m. Again, it's at 1033 Glenmore Avenue. We will not stop the solidarity between borders. Thank you and good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Yes, thank you. Good night.
To be free.